Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A pair of series creators and executive producers are standing by for you this hour. Our first subject is reuniting with Wipeout, the obstacle course unlike any other competition, back on TBS after a 7-year absence. Matt Kernitz joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Movie classics get turned on in surreal fashion on Cinematose, playing on Showtime's video-on-demand format. Jeff Baena turns to us next half hour. And from there, you get your say on last night's Academy Awards presentation on ABC, and that's about an hour from now. And also ahead, we'll have the latest on how many people watched the Oscars. It turned out to be an all-time low, even worse than what ABC expected. We'll have the details, other news notes, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 56 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and we welcome you on this Monday afternoon to the first of three episodes this week of the program about TV's current and future. We are wrapping up this April 2021 in style. Delighted to have you along for the ride, and we invite you to make it an interactive one with our guests and yours truly. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is open for business as well. We'd love to have you get in on that. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, or tune in screen. Follow those instructions, and other people will be live with you. Matt Kernitz from Wipeout on TBS, live with us from Pacific Palisades, California, after these news notes. For the first time ever, less than 10 million people watched an Academy Awards telecast live. Let me say that again. For the first time ever, less than 10 million people watched an Academy Awards telecast live. The exact preliminary number for Nielsen, 9.8 million viewers for ABC's presentation last night. That's 58% fewer viewers than last year's then record low of 23. To the top of the next hour, we'll give you the opportunity to weigh in on what you thought of the Oscars by phone or chat room. Here's our other news notes. With 11 days remaining, Kickstarter reports Mystery Science Theater 3000's campaign has raised more than $3.4 million. Meantime, interactive venture Clash TV has $617,000 in its WeFunder account. HBO has started filming Game of Thrones prequel, House of the Dragon, in England. And Pluto TV will introduce Spanish language content in its multi-channel bundle May 5th. More than 20,000 hours supplied by 85 content makers and distributors will be arranged into 50 channels, mostly by genre, from comedy to romance. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live from Pacific Palisades, California, the creator, executive producer, then and now, of Wipeout, now revived on TBS Thursday night, Matt Kernitz. Matt, welcome aboard. Congratulations on bringing Wipeout back.
Thank you. Very exciting. It's been a long time that we've been off the air, and we're just happy that we're back.
What brought it back?
You know, this is one of those shows that I always knew it was going to come back. It wasn't a matter of if, it was when. You know, when we first premiered back in 2008, you know, America was in the middle of this sort of coming out of a recession. And I think the timing was perfect. Here, you know, was this big, silly show that you just didn't have to think much. You could just tune in and laugh, and there wasn't, you know, there's not a lot of drama involved. It's just good fun, and the timing was perfect back in 2008. Now, you know, flash forward to 2021, and America's been dealing with COVID for, you know, a solid year and stuck at home, and we're back, and, you know, it's just something that the family can sit together and watch and enjoy and laugh, and it doesn't take a lot of energy. You don't have to, you know, you can kind of just forget about the stresses of the day and just enjoy just pure comedy. And so, you know, it felt like a similar time, and I think that the network was aware of that and asked us to bring it back, and we were thrilled to do so.
Well, once you signed on to bring it back, what did it take to put the obstacle course together, get the host, John Cena and Nicole Byer, and get the contestants? Was it a very easy slog to do because you had done it before, or did you have to do some new things to bring it back?
You know, the shows that I do are never easy. They tend to be very big spectacles. Fear Factor was a huge show, and Wipeout is also a huge show. And so, you know, back in the day when we did Wipeout, we had years and years to build the course and get the course to the size that it was. We had, and so when we came back, we'd been off the air for 6.5-7 years. So nothing existed anymore, other than, you know, there was holes in the ground. But even some of our tanks had been filled in. So we really were starting from scratch. But there was an expectation from the audience that the show would come back and be, you know, bigger, bolder and than ever before. And the network wanted that too. And so it certainly was not easy. And then, of course, COVID. You know, we were the biggest production, film or television, that was shooting during the height of COVID. And that was quite a challenge, because obviously we had to keep the crew and the contestants and the host safe. And we wanted to create sort of a feeling when you watch the show that you weren't thinking about COVID. And you'll notice that there are some reality shows out there where, you know, you see that the hosts are spread out awkwardly 6 feet apart, or, you know, I even saw one recently where the contestants had to put on gloves to reach into they had to pull a something out of a barrel, but before they could do it on this game show, they had to put on gloves, and it felt like COVID times. And we sort of set a goal that we didn't want that feeling at all, and we didn't want people to be thinking about it. So we had to take extra precautions to make it a safe environment where we could do that. TBS was amazing. They said, you know, whatever it takes, whatever it costs to shoot during COVID, there was no complaints. And we literally spent millions and millions of dollars just on COVID safety to pull it off. But we did it. And, you know, if you watch the show, you would be hard-pressed to know that there was COVID going on during the filming.
And the results can be seen Thursday nights, 9:10 Pacific time on TBS. We're talking about Wipeout, the revival of the series that was a big hit for quite a spell on ABC. Now it's back, hosted by John Cena and Nicole Byer, with a whole cast and crew, led by creator and executive producer Matt Kernitz, who did the original, as well as a little thing called Fear Factor 2. He's with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised from Pacific Palisades, California, beautiful countryside, by the way, in that great state. And he's with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Great to have you aboard this Monday of a big week, getting ready for a big month coming up with a lot of major news in the TV world. If you have a question or comment for Matt, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up, we have a special edition on Wednesday, and my lead guest will be, believe it or not, 20 years ago, he was an Oscar nominee with his brother Chris for the adapted screenplay nomination for a little thing called About a Boy. He later went on to do one of Amazon's first TV hits, Boats on the Jungle. I'm talking about Oscar nominee Paul White. He now has a new movie coming out next week on Crackle. It's called Bel Canto. It matches the world of romance and the world of music, opera specifically, starring Julianne Moore. Paul Weitz from Bel Canto, the co-writer and director. He's with us live as our lead guest in an iterated exclusive Wednesday, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Then and now, I've often wondered, Matt, why do contestants do Wipeout? What sort of drives them to tackle this obstacle course?
I mean, I think people do it for a couple reasons. You know, number one, people want to challenge themselves. You know, this is the world's largest obstacle course, and people sitting at home think that they could do it. You know, we always create this show so that the viewer can live vicariously through the people they're seeing on the screen. So, you know, you're sitting at home and you think, well, that could be me. You know, it's not like Ninja Warrior where you have to be an extreme athlete to get through, you know, the course. So people, it could be, you know, you're watching and it's like, well, that could be my neighbor. That could even be my grandmother running the course. So people feel like they could pull it off. I think everybody, you know, another reason is people want to have their 15 minutes of fame, and this is a fun way to do that. And then lastly, people want to win the prize. It's a $25,000 prize. They think they can come on the course, they can kill it, win the prize. So I think, you know, it's a combination of those three reasons.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take for you to find the new host? You have John Cena, who has been on a roll in terms of television work. He's done Nickelodeon and other things, too, of course, coming off his great career with WWE. as one of the most popular wrestlers. And then you have Nicole Byer, who I've enjoyed for years. She's been on this program some time ago. She just did Nail It for Netflix. Everyone who's seen her knows that she is a very funny woman, and what you see is what you get. And I'm curious, how long did it take for them, both John and Nicole, to get together and bring the chemistry out?
Yeah, so, you know, finding new hosts is obviously a big process. From day one, John Cena and Nicole were on our wish list, but we didn't think we could get them. You know, John has become a massive movie star, and you know, with Fast and Furious and Suicide Squad, and he's just doing one movie after another. So it looked like scheduling was going to be incredibly difficult. Nicole Byer is in a big Netflix deal. And so, you know, Netflix has a lot of control over, well, not just Netflix, any network that's paying a host a lot of money to do a show is able to say, you're only going to do our show. We don't want you doing any other shows. We had a very fortunate situation. Brandon Reig, who is one of the big network executives, was involved at ABC in the early days of Wipeout. So he had a really special sort of soft place in his heart for Wipeout. So I was able to call him and say, hey, you know, we would love to have Nicole on the show. Is there any way that you guys would let her do that? And they were willing to do that, which was awesome. You know, yes, we're in a competitive field, but we all do work together. You know, I've worked with Brandon. He's worked with me. He's worked with Corey Henson, who is the current executive at TBS. And so relationships really do help in this business, and we were able to pull it off. And you know, it's a big risk when you change the hosts, and when you have A-list celebrities like these two, and you can't ask them to do a screen test. That doesn't necessarily work when you're talking with this level of celebrity. So you kind of cross your fingers, but it turned out great. They really, you know, the most we were able to do because of their schedules was say, hey, before you guys show up on set for the first time, can you go out and, you know, have dinner? Now, remember, we're stuck in COVID, so that became a little bit difficult. But they had to do some promotional work together, and they were able to spend a little bit of time socially distanced and safe where they got to know each other. So by the time they showed up on set, it wasn't as if they had just met, you know, minutes ago. But the chemistry, and they clicked immediately. It's a really interesting sort of, I kind of call it like a work-wife, work-husband relationship. You know, they bicker and they fight, and she teases him and he takes it. She's pretty blue with her humor, which kind of tends to shock him a little bit. So, but it works, you know, and it's turned out really well. And then we also added to the mix Camille Kostek, who is the, you know, field host, and she's fantastic. And she, you know, as I said before, we want people to live vicariously through the contestants, and it helps to have these hosts because you're also seeing it through their eyes because they're the ones that are reacting there. And so you see how they react, and you know, they're very different than the previous hosts, and their reactions are very different. And I think that's what makes it fun, is that this is, you know, it's the same general show, but you're seeing it through a new lens of these hosts. And I've certainly been enjoying it this season, and hopefully the viewers are too.
Yeah. What kind of feedback are you getting about the pieces of the obstacle course? Is there something new you add to the course this time around that people are really enjoying, let's say, compared to other parts?
Yeah. You know, the feedback I get about the course, people like the surprise elements. So, you know, we have certain parts of the course where you're running along at full speed, and then the wall just opens up in front of you and just takes you out, where you just don't know it's coming. We have these giant airbags. It's like, imagine a car airbag, but it's probably 3 or 4 times the size of a car airbag. And you're facing the wall, sort of inching across the wall, and then comes this giant airbag that just explodes with a tremendous force and knocks you into the mud. Now, we're getting better and better at how we do things. It used to be in the past that maybe you would just run right by that airbag, but because, you know, we're evolving and we're learning, so we, you know, we've now made a mechanism where as you're moving past that airbag and maybe you're going a little too fast, a hydraulic arm lifts up, which is only there just to slow you down, because now you have to crawl over that arm, and you're crawling over that arm right in front of where the airbag is. So I think the element of surprise is one of my favorite parts. The only part of the course that really stayed from day one are the big balls. Those are our most famous and iconic part of the course. If you haven't seen the show, imagine four 10-foot tall giant inflated balls that are above the water, and you have to leap from one to the next to the next. It's not impossible. People have done it, but most people don't succeed. You know, when we design this course, unlike most courses, we design for more failure than success because it's the failure that's funny. So we absolutely design it looking at, like, you know, what? How can we get 80 to 90% of the people to wipe out? You know, one of the oldest tenets of comedy is person slipping on the banana peel. And that goes all the way back to the beginning of film. And so when we designed Wipeout from day one, it was like, well, how do we have, how do we create that and be able to repeat it over and over and over again? And from that came Wipeout.
Yeah. One thing that people don't see is what it takes to operate that course. I mean, you see all the moving parts, including the big wipeout zone at the end where you go for the money. But what they don't see is how this course operates, especially, for example, the balls are stationary, you know, one after the other. But then there's other parts that are moving. They're moving either clockwise or counterclockwise or up and down. Is that done by I've always wondered, is that done by computer? Is that done by hand at some sort of remote location? How do you work those elements
right.
of the course?
So what I think people probably don't know is that there are 300 people behind the scenes. It takes many operators. There's hydraulics and pistons, and yes, it is a moving, living course. In the past, my co-creator Scott Larson was the guy on the button, and he's the main guy, and you know, and he's kind of mischievous, and he has in front of the course, it looks sort of like almost like NASA, and he has all these buttons and levers and remote controls, and he can control the entire course. The course is so big that sometimes he needs help, so there'll be people to his left and right that are, you know, might be the guy on the left might be controlling the spin. But the thing that's going to wipe that person out, that's really going to hit him hard, that is in Scott's hands. This season, we've passed the baton on to Kenny Shackelford, and Kenny he's amazing. Kenny is this young – well, he's not young anymore. When we started, he was a young kid who came on to help us test all of our obstacles. And he was on a team that we called the Black and Blue Team. And so this was a team of just sort of crazy kids, and I say kids, they were, you know, 18 to 25-year-olds that would test every obstacle over and over again for safety. So we call them Black and Blues as a joke because, you know, we pummeled them before we would put any contestant on the course. So Kenny did that. He was the head Black and Blue. He did that for many years, and then he was the perfect person to come into this position to actually push the button because he knows exactly what it does to himself because he's put himself in there, you know, and our feeling is that we would never put a contestant through something that we wouldn't put our own crew through. And testing is a really interesting process, too. You know, first we test with the Black and Blues. Sometimes before the Black and Blues even do it, we'll have a crash test dummy. So let's say there's a 75-foot slide that goes in the wipeout zone. Maybe you're going to start in the wipeout zone 75 foot up and you're going to slide down and fling off into the air. First, we take a real crash test dummy. You know, it weighs 150 pounds and we put it up on the slide because we want to see, well, where is that going to land? Did it fly right out of the tank? I want to know that with the crash test dummy before I put a Black and Blue in it. Once we've done that, then the Black and Blues come in and they'll test it over and over and over again. Weeks of testing sometimes, dialing it in. Okay, that was too fast. How do we slow it down? Nope, it was too slow. Well, if we add methacil, which is like a lubricant, that will speed it up. So then we dial it in with the Black and Blues, do it over and over and over again, and then we bring in the reelies. So the reelies are friends of the crew that volunteer. They get paid like $100. And so they're friends of the crew, and they come in, and now they test it. Because they're going to come at it in the way that a normal person would. The Black and Blues, they think too much, right? Because they've done it. They know what's going to happen. There's no surprises. But the reelies, we treat them just like a contestant. We don't show them the course in advance. You know, we say you're going to run out there and you're just going to go from point A to point Z, and good luck. And so now we get to get a real sense of how's a real person going to react on this course. And once we've done all that testing, now it's okay and we can bring the real contestants on.
You're hearing Matt Kernitz. He is the creator and executive producer of both the original Wipeout on ABC and now the new version, which started on April 1st of this very month. And now it's on Thursdays, 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on TBS, available on cable and satellite. Matt joins us live from Pacific Palisades, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He's got some busy projects coming up. for TV in the future. We'll talk about that shortly. If you have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with Matt, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, we'll have two key people from Estrella Media, the fast-growing Spanish-language television organization. It's not just one network anymore, Estrella TV. It's two, with the recent premiere of Estrella News, the 24-hour news network. They're also now available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and they have a very big upfront presentation coming up next month. We'll also be part of the digital content new front next week. Joining us will be executives Jason Hall and Renee Santaella. That's coming up Friday, 3 to Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Matt, you have a very busy schedule because in addition to Wipeout, you've got a bunch of projects, I understand, that you've got in development. What's happening there?
So I have a deal with Lionsgate, and I've been with Lionsgate now for 7 years. And so, you know, my deal at Lionsgate is to create and produce television shows. So although Wipeout is not a Lionsgate project, it's something that sort of was a carve-out for me because, I always felt like it was going to come back at some point. So 7 years ago when I made my deal with Lionsgate, I said to them, you know, there's one show that if it comes back, you have to allow me to do, and that's been in my contract and the new contracts ever since. So they've been awesome and have allowed me to do that. But, you know, you can't just, you know, rest your laurels on one show because you never know, right? We were very lucky that Wipeout came back and has been a big hit, and hopefully we will have more seasons of it, but you don't know. So you have to keep developing, and you have to keep feeding the beast. I've continued to develop, and we've sold one show to HBO Max and two others to Fox. Because they haven't been announced yet, I can't say what they are, but I can tell you that, you know, like all the shows I do, they're sort of big and exciting, large-scale projects that I'm looking forward to sharing with everybody. And, you know, hopefully we'll get another hit because, you know, you're only as good as your last hit in this business.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, speaking of revivals, you know, ABC, where Wipeout started, has had a big run the last few years of reviving game shows. Supermarket Sweep, Press Your Luck, Card Shark, Sibling Family Feud, 100,000 on Paper. What do you think about this revival trend of game shows? And is there a game show that, because you've done game shows also, as well as shows like Fear Factor and Wipeout, is there a game show that you would like to revive if you had the chance?
Yeah, you know, revivals, it's the safe bet for a network, right? I mean, you know, you can buy something that's got some name value and it's going to bring existing fans, and nostalgia obviously works, and it certainly has worked for ABC. You know, I personally prefer to come up with completely new projects that no one's seen before. You know, having said that, we did try, it wasn't really a revival. For CBS, I did Candy Crush. You know, it was one of my big disappointments. I don't have too many disappointments in my career, but, you know, we spent a lot of time and energy on that, and it was, you know, one season and out, which happens. Look, most shows are not hits. You know, our business, you could generally say only 1 out of 10 is going to work. I think I've been very, very fortunate that I was on, you know, The Real World for MTV for many years. And then I was on Fear Factor for, you know, hundreds of episodes, and then Wipeout for hundreds of episodes. That's not the norm. I know that. But because I had that success, when you have a show like Candy Crush that's one and out, it's disappointing, you know, and you put so much energy into it. I think that with a show like that, because Candy Crush was literally played by billions of people worldwide, there's such an expectation of what that show should be in their minds that it, I think it's really hard to please the audience in that sense. We did our best, and I think it looked really cool and great, but unfortunately it just didn't work. So, you know, I don't think doing a revival show is in my future. That's not to say that I wouldn't bring back like we did with Wipeout. I just don't know that I would go and find a game show that existed in the past and try to bring that back. I'm not going to say never, but I would say most likely that's not going to happen for me.
I guess for a proper final question, what do you think of this new generation of what I would call spectacle shows? Shows like The Masked Singer, The Masked Dancer, of shows that are really built on like Wipeout in a way, spectacle. grand performances.
Yeah, I love it. And you know, one of the things that those shows that you just mentioned in Wipeout and Fear Factor have in common is that they are great for co-viewing, meaning there's not that many shows out there where kids and adults will all watch together. And that has been a recipe for my success. If you look at all of my shows, maybe not as much Real World. That was probably a younger viewers. When I say younger, meaning more teenagers than adults were watching that. But the shows that I was involved in the creation of, and just like the ones, the spectacles that you mentioned, really, you know, brings families together. And there was an interesting thing that happened in the very early days of Wipeout, you know, back in, let's say, 2009. We were shooting the Wipeout Zone. And when we shoot the Wipeout Zone, it's massive lights, or Klieg lights are you know, spinning in the sky, and lasers. And so you can see it from miles away, but it is a closed set. And I was surprised to see that a police officer had come onto the set. And, of course, I'm super curious. I think that's what makes me want to be in this business, is because I always want to know what's going on. And so I walked up to this police officer and, you know, introduced myself. And he said, you know, I saw the lights from the street and I wanted to come in. And he said, you know, this is the only show on television that brings me and my 16-year-old daughter together. With the exception of this show, we pretty much never see each other during the week, but once a week we come together to watch the show. And that was like a big moment for me, because I was like, wow, here I thought that we were just doing this silly, kind of dumb show, popcorn entertainment, but actually we were doing something really good and we were bringing families together. And I love that about this show. And so, you know, the shows that I produce, I always look for co-viewing. And I think these big spectacle shows that you mentioned really do that. And you know, with Wipeout, although some of our humors, particularly with Nicole, can be a little bit maybe hard PG-13, maybe even R-rated, that humor will go right over the head of your kid. The adults will get it. They'll laugh about the jokes. But then, you know, the kid's going to laugh at somebody getting smacked in the face by a smack wall. So there's something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen Wipeout yet, you can see the revival this Thursday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time on TBS. Check your locals where TBS is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.tbs.com. That's www.tbs.com. Wipeout on TBS. This Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Pat Kernitz, the creator executive producer of Wipeout, first time around, now this time around. Thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody involved for making a comeback. And good luck on your new projects with Lionsgate. We'd love to have you back. I'd love to have you talk about Real World, because that program really was one of the great underpinnings of the reality unscripted movement, one of the great trendsetters of that.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to talk about that the next time around. And I would just say, if anyone's interested in being on Wipeout, we are currently casting at wipeoutcasting.com.
All right, you got it, wipeoutcasting.com. Matt, all the greatest. Have a fantastic week.
Thank you.
Matt Kernitz, creator and executive producer of Wipeout, joining us live from Pacific Palisades, California. More tomorrow, we televised coming away, but first some words to the fine folks at audible.com. Are you looking for a very interesting kind of romantic tome you can enjoy with your ears as well as your mind? How about this one by Cara Bastone called Sweet Talk? It's sweet, it's romantic, and it's a lot of fun, and you can get it in audiobook form right now with a trial subscription to Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, IR Radio, etc. All you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. Get one free audiobook, 1 month trial, health and wellness information, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And if you are an Amazon Prime member already, you're in super luck. Two audiobooks for your trial of one. And one of them could be from the growing, fast-growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcasts, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, and one woman and one man performances. So how about making today the day you discover, or someone you love discover, how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? All it takes is heading out to audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in the next half hour, we switch to a new series on Showtime called Cinema Toast. We've got the creator executive producer of that series, Jeff Banner, joining us live from Los Angeles. Plus, classic trivia question of the week. And after the top of the hour, you get your word on the Oscars last night on ABC. All coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Connect the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn.com. Together reaching nearly 60 million people around the world every month and growing. You want a really fun, entertaining musical experience? How about the Hilltop Radio Show? Check it out tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this final Monday in the afternoon of 8/20/21. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Webbyard. Great to have you with us. Shout out, by the way, to the people behind the TV of Tomorrow show, which started earlier today, as well as Spring TV, which is going on virtually here in New York. TV Tomorrow happening with our good friend Tracy Spredlow out on the West Coast. And I'll be part of that coming up on Thursday morning. Tell you about that a little later on in the program. We have another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, and we invite you to make use of our phone to be interactive with him and us. 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Once again, we have a creator executive producer for you to hear, and this time is the creator executive producer of a new series that started earlier this month on Showtime's Video On Demand format, which is available on cable systems, on smart TV sets, and smart TV devices. It's a very unusual show called Cinema Toast, and here to talk about it is its creator and executive producer from Los Angeles, Jeff Baena. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Hey, how's it going?
Very, very fine, thank you. So explain Cinema Toast, how it all come about.
At the beginning of the pandemic, I was just trying to think of a way to still be creative and make stuff. I was supposed to make a movie over the summer, and obviously that didn't happen. And I was playing poker with some friends online, and I kind of made a joke that maybe there's something to be learned from that movie, What's Up, Tiger Lily, by Woody Allen, where he took like a old Hong Kong action movie from the 60s and just redubbed the whole thing. And it sort of was a joke, and then I started thinking about it, and I was like, maybe this is actually a good idea. Maybe if, like, instead of just redubbing it, we actually recut things and maybe put other movies together and Frankenstein them and just come up with entirely new stories and get new voice talent and re-score it and redo all the sound design. And one thing led to another, and I talked to the Duplass brothers, who I had previously worked on my last film with, and they loved the idea, so we went out and pitched it, and Showtime bought it, and we started making it.
And in addition to you being involved, you also have the Duplass brothers being involved. And as you know, when the Duplass brothers get involved in a television project, they've got involved with quite a few of them as executive producers, it usually works out great.
Yeah, I mean, they're amazing. I've known Mark Duplass for almost 20 years, and I've known Jay for a while. And, you know, I've always respected their work, and I think creatively we're very much on the same wavelength. So they seem like ideal partners to team up with on this. And, you know, they obviously have some extensive experience with television as well as movies, and I did have such an amazing experience with them on my last movie, so I figured this would be a good idea, and I think it was.
You know, Jeff, when I first heard about your series, you mentioned What's Up, Tiger Lily as an inspiration. Way back when, Jay Ward, the man that created Rocky and Bullwinkle, did a series called Fractured Flickers, and it was a series with Hans Conried, wonderful actor and comedian, where they would take silent movies, classic silent movies, and really make them very surreal and very funny by changing the voice, by adding voices, adding unusual dialogue, just turning everything on its ear. And but I'm curious, what does it take to get these movie classics and to twist them inside out?
I'm not familiar with that, but I love Rocky and Bullwinkle. The way we went about it was we found a licensing company who had access to these public domain movies, which technically are free, but when you're talking about international distribution, it gets a little murky. So you need a partner in that who knows sort of the legal world of that. And so they basically gave us a menu of like around, I don't know, like 700, 800 movies to choose from. And sort of what you're describing sounds, I guess, in the same vein as What's Up, Tiger Lily, where it's just a straight up redubbing of an original work. I kind of wanted to do a little bit more than that. And so I enlisted some friends who are all indie filmmakers for the most part, who have really distinct voices. And the idea was that instead of just adding dialogue, which is hard enough, we actually were going to completely reimagine the movies by editing them to create entirely new stories. So there really is no continuity from the original movie to the final product. And then also the idea would be we can, by having this menu of 800 movies, you know, pick and choose different movies and maybe pick different sequences from different movies and marry them together to create entirely new contexts. So, I mean, it sounds a little similar, and, you know, like, it definitely took inspiration from What's Up, Tiger Lily, but I think we kind of went a little bit further with it. And, you know, it's definitely like it was a lot of work to just sort of even just re-edit the movies and sort of find the story, and then, like, trying to match the dialogue to the lip flap was, like, a whole other can of worms that was really difficult but really fun and rewarding.
Well, when you, let's say, for a particular episode, and you get a particular film to do it, what inspires you to, let's say, let's twist the situation this way, or let's bring this familiar voice or unfamiliar voice or independent filmmaker to the table so that we can have a lot of fun with it?
I mean, for me, I can only speak for myself. Like, I always look for one scene, some particular scene that kind of is like the seed for the rest of the movie. The same thing with when I'm like writing an original movie, just one thing that sort of sets the tone or the vibe of the whole thing. And then you kind of build out from there. So you sort of find it that way. And then, you know, you look for other scenes that will match, or you just sort of look for any sort of narrative that will complement it. In terms of like looking for other partners in this, in terms of like other directors and writers, I just look for people that have a real distinct voice and are, you know, really idiosyncratic and have a take on things. So when you watch their movies, it doesn't feel really cookie cutter. It feels more like they all have a real position and a real point of view. And I figured, you know, the other thing about this that's a little crazy is there was only about 10 days turnaround time between when we got our movies approved from the licensing to when we had have them completed. So there really was like a mad dash element to this, where, you know, you might have your mindset on one movie and then find out at the last second Amazon or someone bought it with like aggregated as part of like a large group of other movies that are now suddenly have distribution, so it's no longer available. So we had to be really, really malleable with our process and not get, you know, too precious and fall in love with too many things. So it really was sort of like you needed someone who's used to that sort of dynamic, which generally is what independent filmmakers are used to, just having challenges thrown at them and things falling apart at the very last second and having to improvise. So I've found most people who had that background in independent film were really sort of well-suited for this.
We're hearing Jeff Baena. He is the creator and executive producer of one of the most unique programs Showtime has ever put together on its services. It's called Cinematose, and you can find it on Showtime's video on demand format. It's available either on your local cable system or it's available on most smart TV sets or smart TV devices. Jeff joined us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us on this first, or should say final, Monday of April 2021. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Jeff's in Los Angeles. I'm in New Haven, New York, where it's now 56 degrees at the top of the hour. And you have a question or comment for Jeff? Well, don't be shy. Put your fingers to work, along with your voice. Make the call, 646-652-2906. And use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up, by the way, before the top of the hour, we have our classic trivia question of the week. Second week, we're offering this question. And if you're first with the correct answer, speaking of television stuff, you can win two soundtracks from the classic science fiction series Babylon 5 by its only composer, Christopher Frank. And coming up Wednesday on our special edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, second of three we're doing this week, my lead guest will be the Academy Award-nominated writer-director of About a Boy, also involved in the popular Amazon series Boats on the Jungle, Paul Weitz will be with us. He is the co-writer and director of a brand-new movie called Bel Canto, starring Julianne Moore, and that premieres next month on Crackle, also available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Academy Award nominee Paul Weitz, my lead guest, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Along the way, Jeff, in putting your series together, you've managed to round up a very talented group of actors to join you in this adventure.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, germane to what you just said, Paul Weitz is one of my close friends, and he was in three of my first four movies. So I love Paul, and he, you know, generally, like, in terms of performers, I look for people that can kind of just be natural but also be really sensitive to comedy and drama. And, you know, sort of slowly built up a stable of actors that I like to work with and continue to work with, mainly because of trust and their abilities. But Paul is awesome, and, like, he's literally, like, in all of my movies, and I love him so much, and he's so funny.
Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, we want to hear about Bel Canto. It's a terrific movie with Julianne Moore, and it's a very unique, it's like romance in the world of opera, in the world of music, and which is not surprising because of what he did with Mozart in the Jungle. which was a long-running hit on Amazon, one of their first big hits for Smart
TV. He's so talented and smart.
Besides from Paul, who are some of the actors you're working with?
Well, in Cinematose, it's Alison Brie and John Reynolds, Nick Offerman, Megan Mullally, Lauren Weedman, and Fred Armisen, who Megan Mullally I've never actually worked with before, but I've worked with her husband, Nick, a bunch of times. Then, you know, in terms of, like, other directors that we have that are talented, Aubrey Plaza directed probably my favorite episode of the series, and she has Christina Ricci on it. Chris Ray, who just did a movie called I Used to Go Here, I think that's what it's called, which is available, I think, on HBO now. She has, like, Gillian Jacobs and Kate McCucci and Nicole Byer and a bunch of other really talented actors. So we were able to pull together, like, a really cool cast for this. I think everyone was really excited to work, especially during the pandemic. And the way that we sort of worked this out, you didn't have to leave your house. Everything was done remotely over Zoom or Evercast or whatever it's called. We were able to basically have the entire production done safely and remotely. And I think everyone was sort of champing at the bit to get work done and, like, do something. And everyone was kind of just, like, raring to go. And so we got, like, a pretty amazing cast pretty much in every episode.
Did you give everybody a particular set of ground rules, like, let's say, be as wild as you want to be, you know, really, you know, nothing is off limits in terms of what you want to do with the movie?
Pretty much, yeah. I said the one thing to not do is to sort of ironically make fun of this process, you know, draw too much attention. The main idea I wanted to do is sort of transcend the medium so that when you're watching this, you forget that these are, you know, redubbed and, you know, re-edited. I wanted them to sort of exist on their own as its own thing. And so the main sort of thing was just to not make fun of this process. And so in addition to the comedies, which, you know, there's like 8 comedies out of the 10, which you'd expect because it is kind of like a fun, trippy, stony project. You know, Aubrey and Numa Perrier did dramas, which I absolutely adore. And I think it's so cool because the sort of commitment to it as opposed to just sort of like having a, you know, goofy time, it's really welcomed and I think fully embraces the ethos of the project.
Was there a particular kind of genre movie, especially genre comedy, that you wanted to spoof, whether it's like the famous screwball comedies of the 1930s or a comedy that has a lot of dialogue in it and that's where a lot of the humor is generated from, or sort of slice of life comedy? But I'm just curious if there's a particular genre film that you were very excited about bringing to a different life, if you will, on Cinematose.
I think all of the above. I mean, my episode's more of like a, you know, screwball comedy farce. But, you know, growing up in the 90s, I absolutely adored cult movies and, you know, midnight movies. And I think for the most part, this is like a really fun thing to watch late at night when you're maybe a little messed up because it's fun. And so I just really wanted everyone to just sort of feel free and explore and find a way in their own way without really imposing any limitations on them other than taking it seriously and not making it a joke. But, you know, I think if you watch every episode, they're so unique. There really isn't much overlap over any of them. You know, like from Jordan Firstman's episode where it's about, you know, a guy who's going to great lengths to try to stop gay marriage to, you know, Mel Eslin's episode where it's about sort of what happens after a monster movie ends. And sort of like the heroes are sort of left to their own device, to J.G. Plass's episode where it's an exploration of Ronald Reagan's dementia and his depression and how he sort of projects cowboy movies onto his world to try to make sense of everything. It's everything. It's such a crazy grab bag of stuff that it's really like for episode to episode, there's no continuity. And that was ultimately my intention, to let everyone just kind of have fun with it and sort of like have free reign and sort of express themselves in this time when it feels like everyone was kind of having trouble getting anything going because everything was getting shut down from COVID.
I would guess with the monster movies, you had a lot of fun given the style of those films and people still remember the Toei movies, whether it's Godzilla, which by the way, the original Godzilla film is a fantastic movie. And I want to credit Turner Classic Movies for running the original Godzilla film, all in Japanese, as opposed to, along with sometimes the movie with the Raymond Burr and the American sequences.
The 1985 one?
Not 1985, but the American version of the original Japanese movie, where Raymond Burr plays a reporter,
oh, yeah,
and he sort of inserts himself. They insert his sequences into the film at various points.
Yeah, I mean, Godzilla's great. I mean, I love Godzilla. I also love that Godzilla's like kind of a good guy. It's a nice like subversion of expectations.
Yep, for sure. Cinema Toast. It's Showtime's brand new series, which mixes and matches all sorts of genres of film into something really funny and something spectacular in terms of the voice talent you see both in front and behind the camera. Jeff Baena is the creator and executive producer. The series runs on Showtime's video on demand and digital service, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and in some cases on your local cable system. We have a few more minutes with Jeff on today's episode. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. And if you have a question or comment for him, bring it up at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. By the way, week from Monday, we will be going prime time, early evening with our show, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific. That's 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific. And our lead guest, by the way, will be a person who just received a Sports Emmy Award nomination for a documentary on HBO called The Weight of Gold she produced. Her name is Amber Thea Harris. She's also a correspondent for various sports networks, and she's working on an interactive app. It could become an interactive TV app. Amber Theorakis from The Weight of Gold on HBO, Sports Emmy nominee this year. Sports Emmy was given out the end of May by the National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences. That's different from the Academy, the TV that does the Emmy Awards every fall. So she'll be with us. That's on a special evening edition of our program a week from today, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. We'll also have updates on the first day of the Digital Content Newsfront. We're expecting announcements of Roku, Amazon, and others. We'll have that in an expanded news notes section on our program next Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jeff, what was a surprising thing about doing all this, you know, being able to put a show like this together? Was there a unique pleasure that you never thought you'd have out of doing this?
I guess just seeing it come to life, you know, like everyone has like weirdo ideas and very rarely do they come to fruition. I think, you know, obviously as a filmmaker, that's sort of my job description, but in terms of like actually, you know, calling together a group of talented filmmakers and sort of having this gonzo idea and then watching it come real and sort of, it was more than anything, it was like an act of faith. So, and you know, this was sort of my first, I guess, foray into television. So having that sort of experience was really, 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 really fun. And just sort of supervising all the episodes and creatively working with everyone as a producer and sort of encouraging their, you know, their creativity, all that stuff is like really fun to me. So I guess more than anything, just the fact that it even exists is like so wild to me. Like it's such a weirdo show. Like I can't express to you like how funny it is that this actually like happened.
Mm-hmm. As a filmmaker, who are some of your idols, either actors, directors, writers, people that, you know, you look up to that actually impact who you are as a filmmaker or a TV maker?
Robert Altman, David Lynch, Ingmar Bergman, Michael Ritchie, I guess Krzysztof Kozlowski, Werner Herzog, Werner Fassbinder, the huge, for the most part. Yeah. Probably more than
you
anyone.
You mentioned Robert
David
Altman,
Lynch,
Jeff,
and Robert Altman.
And a lot of people may not know that Robert Altman got his start in television. And he was one of the original directors and producers of Combat, which is still the only successful war, one of the few successful war dramas. It is the longest running drama about war on television, 5 seasons on ABC, and Altman produced, actually set the tone for the show. And you can catch his episodes on YouTube. I think it's one of the most underrated TV shows ever made, and the cast led by Rick Jason and Vic Morrow, the cinematography, the music by Leonard Rosenman, still one of my favorite composers around, just absolutely spot on. And Altman did episodes of Bonanza, did a lot of interesting episodes of different TV shows, and you can really tell in some of his episodes, he was starting to develop the style, like overlapping dialogue and things like that in his work.
Have you ever seen Countdown, the movie Countdown?
Yes.
Yeah, do you know, like, that whole story behind the overlapping dialogue in that movie, where it was, like, he that was basically the first time he really kind of went for it. And I think whatever, I don't know what studio made it, but they were very not pleased when they saw the dailies, and he got into a massive fight with them. But that was like when he was first trying out the overlapping dialogue stuff, and people were not really ready for it. I mean, you see, there's like definitely like some remnants of overlapping dialogue, or like sort of like the beginning of it. You see, there's Ernie Kovacs, when you watch him in old movies, he sort of does that, and it feels like if he hadn't died young, like who knows what, I mean, I would have loved to see him and Robert Altman work together. There was such like a naturalism to him that was so amazing. But yeah, I think Altman really like kind of like sort of broke through and decided that he was going to fight for this sense of naturalism in a world where everything felt so sort of stodgy and mannered. So I'm a massive fan of his, and just his whole process and his camera work and sort of the freedom he gives to the actors. I really like, it resonates with me. Sorry, my dog's going a little crazy.
People about Countdown. I've seen the movie several times on Turner Classic Movies. It was Warner Brothers 7 Arts that made the film. And William Conrad was the ex-canon, and one of the narrator of Rocky and Bullwinkle was the executive producer. And yes,
it's all coming full circle, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yep. And they were not happy with the overlapping dialogue, and you can see the film was cut. The ending looks crazy. I thought in many respects it was a very interesting movie. Leonard Rosenman wrote the score for that film. It was one of his best scores ever, with his wonderful 12-tone style. And he's the master of that, the rising phrase, I like to call it. Nobody liked him. And but there's a lot of even as botched as that movie was, there were a lot of good things about that film that did get through, which is why I think Turner Classic Movies keeps on running it.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, Robert Altman's probably my all-time favorite with David Lynch. And, you know, California Split, I've probably seen that movie 70 times, if not more. I know it inside and out. That's probably one of my favorite things ever made. And just pretty much everything he did was great, even the works that don't even get attention. There's movies like A Perfect Couple that I don't think anyone's ever seen that I absolutely adore. You know, A Wedding is so great. But, you know, obviously the big ones like MASH and Nashville and Long Goodbye, and even his later stuff in the 90s, like, he's just a master, and he's had such a big influence on me, and I love his spirit.
Did you say you were an Ernie Kovacs fan? Because in some ways, your show reminds me a little bit of Ernie Kovacs, who did a lot of spoofing, like Sid Caesar in the early days of television, of classic movies.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love him. That's what I was saying, as I think, you know, if those guys ever teamed up, it would have been pretty amazing. But he was sort of doing a similar thing, I think, in movies before there was overlapping dialogue, where he was kind of overlapping his dialogue over people. And I think it was played a little bit zanier, and he was kind of like a little bit of a wilder character. But I think had he had a longer career, he would probably be one of my favorite actors.
I'll tell you, Ernie Kovacs did die young, and it's a shame because I think, given the technology to do television and film today, I think he would have had a field day with everything from satellites, mini cams, micro cams, drones, GoPro, high definition, ultra HD. He would have had smart TVs. He would have had a field day. He was way ahead of his time and of his time. And
absolutely.
And I said, you know, died way too young. Well, now that you've had a taste of television, Jeff, do you want to do another TV series? Any thoughts about doing that?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I have a couple of ideas in the works. I mean, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, movies are definitely the priority, but TV is so much fun to work in. And it's a completely different format, obviously everyone knows that. But just, like, the whole workflow and mindset is different. And I obviously watch a lot of TV, so it always felt like something I wanted to dabble in, just wanted to find the right thing and didn't want to just get in there and just do random episodic stuff. I wanted to kind of be a little bit more behind the sort of ideas of it and be a little bit more of a creative force as opposed to like a work for hire kind of thing. So I have a couple ideas that I'd like to explore for sure.
If you're looking for something way out, offbeat, surreal, et cetera, here's one for you. Cinema Toast, new series on Showtime. Again, it's available on their video on demand digital format. That's different from their normal pay service. And it's available, that digital format is available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and in some places around the country, your local cable system. For more news about the program online, go to sho.com. That's sho.com. Cinema Toast, started early this month, and now playing regularly. Jeff Banner, the creator and executive producer of the series, thank you very much for coming aboard. Congratulations on getting it on the air, you and your entire cast and crew. Hopefully the beginning of a long run with that series, and hopefully the beginning of a great adventure for you in the world of television. It's been a delight having you on.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you.
Same here, Jeff. All the greatest. Have a super week. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Jeff Baina from Cinema Toast joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We are looking for our latest winner, and that can be you if you know the answer to this question. By the way, if you know the answer and you're first with it, this is our second week offering the question, our prize, two great soundtracks from the marvelous science fiction classic show from J. Michael Straczynski, Babylon 5, music by its composer, Christopher Frank. And these two soundtracks can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Name Marissa Hardikay's first television series. That's the star of Law & Order SVU, now in like year 22 on NBC, Thursday nights at 9. So, it's name Marissa Hardikay's first television series. Three clues. One-word title. It was on NBC, and it was in 1986. Name Marissa Hardikay's first television series. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. The first with the correct answer, you win our pair of Babylon 5 soundtracks by Christopher Frankie. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. This is UBC Simon TWBT. If you won previously, you are not eligible. But I'll tell you what, if you know somebody who'd like to get involved, have them get involved. Give them their chance to be in the winning spotlight. One more time, here's our classic trivia question. Name Marissa Hargitay's first television series. So three clues again. One-word title, NBC, 1986. Didn't last too long, but it was a stepping stone to greater fame with Law & Order Special Victims Unit. Again, know the answer? Make that email happen. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You're listening to Marvy Televised. We're the promo about TV's current and future versus three episodes we're doing on this final week of April 2021. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Glad to have you with us. Thanks to both of our guests for making it happen. Both of them are series creators and executive producers. Matt Kearns from Wipeout, and just in this past half hour, Jeff Baina from Cinema Toast on Showtime. And we want to turn the next half hour, as much of it, to all of you. What's your feeling about the Oscars that turned out to be the lowest rated Oscar presentation in history? Well, we want to hear from you. Do you like it, not like it, whatever? Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, and I'll have some thoughts as well about the telecast. Don't forget, our next episode on Wednesday, less than 48 hours from now, my lead guest will be the Academy Award-nominated screenwriter of About a Boy, Paul Weitz. He's also one of the key people behind the long-running Amazon hit Mozart in the Jungle. His latest work is an original movie, Bel Canto, with Julianne Moore. He's the co-writer and director, and that movie premieres next month on Crackle. Paul Weitz, Inner Radio exclusive, right here. That's coming up Wednesday on Tawabi Televised. And then next Friday, we'll help wrap up the month with Jason Hall and Nathan Ella from Estrella Media, the folks behind Estrella TV, and the new network in Spanish, Estrella News. Jason is Vice President of Sales, Executive VP of Sales, and Renee is Digital Streaming Media Vice Executive Vice President. And then again, don't forget, a week from today, on later, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. That's because the digital content new fronts begin next Monday, and they run over into our regular scheduled time. So we'll give you the latest news of what happens. We expect big news from the likes of Roku and Amazon, which has their ad-supported service, imvd.tv. We'll have that for you, and we'll also have the producer of the Sports Emmy-nominated documentary The Weight of Gold on HBO, Amber Thea Harris. She also works at various networks on a freelance basis, and she's also working on an interactive app that may become an interactive TV app. So that is all coming your way a week from today, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. When we come back, we want to hear you about last night's Academy Awards, and I'll have some thoughts about why this was a debacle of the highest order, and it didn't need to be because of miscalculations aplenty. We'll get to that and your thoughts about it after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Blog Talk Radio, which, by the way, is available. Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, all together, they reach nearly 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget tomorrow morning on BTR, it's Kings in the Morning. Have your morning be a great one with Jay King and his crew tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, Kings in the Morning, right here, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final 30 minutes or so of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, final Monday of April 2021. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Outbound with you live from New Weber, York, 56 degrees at the top of this hour. And we invite you to give us your thoughts right now about the Oscars. And whether you like them or not, or in between, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Our chat room is open, so if you're shy about the phone, use the room. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, other people will be in on the conversation with you through Facebook Timeline. Click on that Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker, tune in screen. Follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. If you missed our opening news note an hour ago, here it is. For the first time ever, less than 10 million people watched an Academy Awards telecast live. According to Nielsen, the exact preliminary number, 9.8 million people saw ABC's presentation last night. And that is 58% fewer viewers than last year's then-record low, 23.6 million. It's fair to say that nobody at ABC, at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, anybody associated with the telecast, while they may have thought that this was going to be the low-rated Oscars ever, it would be that low. And frankly, that embarrassing. You know, what I understand, I think there was no question going in that this was going to be low rated. And I understand why. And I understand that the executive producers of this year's telecast, Steven Soderbergh, Stacey Scherer, Jesse Collins, they had a humongous challenge. No question about it. Because of the pandemic, because the pandemic closed movie theaters for most of last year, because many of the films that were up, the majority of people did not see, because those theaters were closed, because they reopened at limited capacity here in New York a few months ago at only like less than 20%. Now, by the way, it's 33%, you should know. And then, frankly, you didn't know about these movies unless you may have seen some of them on Netflix or HBO Max or Amazon or, in the case of Soul, Disney Plus. It's a humongous challenge. And on top of that, with all the issues from the pandemic, to do the show from multiple locations with a smaller crowd and to try to, at the same time, right the issues that have plagued the decline of the Oscars and other award shows for years. Because in the last couple of years, the Academy Awards, and to some extent the Emmy Awards, have dived in audience appeal because the shows have become too much inside baseball, too much politics, too much preachiness, not enough engaging people in what's really the important thing about an award ceremony. The important thing about an award ceremony is really twofold for me and maybe for you. One is to honor and recognize the accomplishments of people in the film world. And equally important, maybe the most important thing, is to engage you, the audience, in the achievements of the film world of a particular year and why these films were selected and why you should go out and see them in a movie theater or when they come on television in some manner. That's what the Oscars and to some extent the Emmys have not done in the last couple of years. And that's why the ratings have gone down. And whether it's been the way the Oscars were presented, whether it was the fiasco of several years ago with La La Land and Moonlight for Best Picture, which was a complete and utter mess that should never have happened, whether it was Seth MacFarlane's remarks against women that screwed up a Oscars, and thank God you had Jennifer Hudson and Shirley Bassey doing performances that saved the show. It's a cumulative thing. And a lot of people have turned off the Oscars and the Emmys, and this year the Grammy Awards and other award shows because of that. Because the shows did not do their job of engaging the audience in the art of filmmaking, the achievements of these films, and why they're important to see. And sad to say, even before the first moment at 8 o'clock last night, 8 p.m. East, 5 Pacific on ABC, you had a sense, and you hoped it wasn't your sense, that the executive producers miscalculated how they should do the show. Here's the first blunder. Not having the best song performances, the best song nominee performances, which have been highlights of recent Oscars, like the Lady Gaga performance of Shallow from A Star Is Born, which they ended up winning best song. Beautiful performance. One of the great moments of television that year. Having all those performances yanked out of the show and put in a pre-show where very few people would watch. That was the first mistake. And boy, was it a colossal blunder. And then, once the show started, it was one blunder after another. Blunder number one, Regina King, a brilliant actress, absolutely fantastic. I might have nominated her, by the way, for hosting the show. That's another thing, too. No host, which was really sorely needed. Whose One Night in Miami directorial debut should have won her an Oscar nomination, to have her come out in terrific fashion and then make the comment about the George Floyd murder, no matter how veiled it was, turn sets off immediately. And then the first half, then, not having film clips. How can you not showcase these movies without film clips in most of the categories? How could you not have a live orchestra when people were giving out awards and coming up to the stage to get them to play the music from their films, rather than, and substitute all that with Questlove doing DJ work. And I thought Questlove did a pretty good job with the DJ, and that should not have happened. There should have been a live audience, a live orchestra, excuse me, for that. Another mistake. Another mistake. In the first hour and half hour, awarding, rather than Best Supporting Actor and Actress, Best Screenplay, Adapted and Original, an international film. Another mistake. Sets turned off. And then the idea of, well, rather than run clips, let's have these biographies of the presenters and the winners. You know, this person did that, whatever, that, which ran on way too long. And acceptance speeches initially at the beginning, they also ran on way too long. And then there was Daniel Kaluuya, who won for Judah and the Black Messiah, and that comment to his mom and dad, they had sex. Whoop-de-darn-do. Wouldn't you have liked it if he had said something along the lines of, my mom and dad are in the audience, and I love you very much. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to express, to have my self-expression in film. Thank you for supporting me all the way. Wouldn't it have been nice to say that to them as opposed to they had sex? And embarrassing your mom and dad in front of a worldwide audience. And I will bet you that mom and dad talked to Daniel after. And by the way, to Daniel's credit, even though he didn't say it to the press afterward backstage, he did, by the way, apologize for that comment. Good for him. And good for his mom and dad, who I had a feeling he got a tongue lashing. And this went on and on and on and on and on. It was like every turn, the show just made every miscalculation you could. And then came the final half hour, when it looked like the show was going to end on time with the final awards. First, after the Best Song, Best Score awards, this musical trivia game that, like, where did this come from? Who dreamed this up? Especially down the stretch. And with Glenn Close doing the butt. First of all, if I was an ABC executive, I might have used the hotline to get on the horn of the producer and saying, get this off the stage or we're taking the show off the air. This was embarrassing, by the way. And I know there were some people who loved the Glenn Close thing. I love Glenn Close immediately. And I know she's Oak right now in terms of awards. But for crying out loud, by the way, this was not improv. This was scripted. Why did ABC, why did the Academy not put their foot down? Embarrassing. Then came In Memoriam. In Memoriam came off like the closing credits of most TV programs, where every single person who was honored got like a nanosecond on the screen. Boom, 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 boom. It was way too fast, and it was way too disgusting. I'll say it again. What the Oscars ought to do is get the Turner Classic Movies people who do their annual TCM Remembers featurette, who do a fantastic comprehensive job that is sensitive and melancholy and fits the mood and is beautifully done. They should be doing the Oscar In Memoriam. What a disgrace. What an affront to all the terrific acting talent and directing talent that passed away this past year. Disgusting. And then, to top it all off, giving the best picture ahead of best actor and actress. And it was a calculated risk that, Chadwick Boseman's going to win best actor. And boy, did that blow up in their face when Anthony Hopkins won it. And he wasn't there to say something about it. And then Joaquin Phoenix, bye. There was no respect for the audience about this show. No respect whatsoever. And by the way, Nomadland deserved better. Chloe Zhao, the director of that film, everybody involved in that film deserved better to have that best picture on at the end of the show. What a blow up. And boy, did it leave a bad taste with people, especially Chadwick Boseman's family. Chadwick Boseman's family. And incidentally, I hope some of you may have had a chance to see Instagram this morning and to see a very classy act by Anthony Hopkins, who this morning in Wales time did a beautiful Instagram video outdoors congratulating the Academy for his honor. Very humble, and also said a wonderful tribute to Chadwick Boseman. You can't make this stuff up. And I do want to say one other thing. There were some great moments in this piece, and they were all acceptance pieces. Chloe Zhao, the director of Nomadland, just marvelous. The winner of Best Supporting Actress for Minari, Yoo Jung, she was so terrific, so infectious. Her enthusiasm was just marvelous. Loved her dialogue with Brad Pitt. And finally, despite all the preachiness, and especially from the winners of that documentary short, who did a whole thing about police brutality that frankly was that was a lie in a lot of ways in terms of the stats that came out, thank God for Tyler Perry and winning with Gene Herschel the National. He deserved it all the way. And his speech about reduced hate presented in every classroom and every possible way all over this country and all over this world. That was, and to me, that was the moment of the night. It was so fantastic. I was so moved by Tyler Perry, and I was also moved, and in a sort of fun way, I was also moved by one other thing. The documentary feature winner, My Octopus Teacher. I got to tell you, things were so bad that when Twitter went into a frenzy when that film, and by the way, here's something you might not know. That film, which was presented on Netflix, was made by a smart TV distributed network that we featured on this program 2+ years ago called Water Bear TV Network. It's a network dealing with the environment. At the time, the network was not carried in the United States. It was carried overseas. And we had Ellen Windemith, who was the founder of the network, on this program. That program was made by Water Bear, My Octopus Teacher. So congratulations to Ellen and her network and her crew and everybody involved in making that. And by the way, we're going to try to get Ellen on the show in the next couple of weeks to talk about where Water Bear is at in terms of its distribution in the United States. But how about that for a real surprise story, which I did not know about until I got a press release from Water Bear earlier this morning. I got to be honest. I'm mortified by what happened with the Oscars. I am mortified. And even I could not predict that less than 10 million people saw this. All I can say is I hope I'm wrong. I think the Oscars have reached the point of no return. I don't think they're going to get those viewers back. The only way I think get them back is if, and ironically, these were the two most entertaining things about the show, aside from those acceptance speeches, in the ad breaks, the trailers for West Side Story and In the Heights. I'm looking forward to seeing both those movies. And as a fan of West Side Story, which I think is the great American musical ever, I'm looking forward to seeing what Steven Spielberg does, especially if he did the whole film in New York, which is what the original movie should have done, in my personal opinion. And I'm thrilled Rita Moreno is singing Somewhere. Perfect. I really am pulling these two films to make it. And I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong in saying that I think the Oscars have reached, again, an inflection point where it will never be the ceremony it used to be. I think the people involved blew it. And I also think that ABC and the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences owes the American deep apology. And it owes every one of the nominated films and a deep apology. They were royally screwed last night. And they didn't need to be. And I hope it serves as a lesson to every major award show dealing with film or television from now on. It's time we stop the inside baseball. It's time we stop the politics. It's time we stop the preaching. It's time we stop the soapbox. And it's time to get back to the business of honoring these movies and TV shows, et cetera, et cetera. And put the focus on educating and enlightening and entertaining the public about these honorees and why they should be seen and why they should be showcased. And why they deserve our undivided attention. It's overdue. Again, I'd like to hear from you. We're going to keep ourselves open for a few more minutes. We'd like to hear from you. What did you think? And by the way, I'm game to hear what you have to say. So call me, 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And by the way, after our show, if you can't get through, I'd love to hear from you. Email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. I will respond within 24 hours. You can find me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Follow me on Twitter. I'd really like to hear from you. And I thought, by the way, that the entertainment news press really were on target with their reviews. Even those that tended to give the show a break. And again, I want to go over one more time the real highlights. I say Chloe Zhao. One more thing about Chloe Zhao. I hope she gets a program development deal. She's a fantastic director and a super talent. By the way, she is the first woman of color to win an Academy Award for Best Director. And I really hope that she signs a TV development deal very soon with anybody. I also hope that Minari is considered for a television series. I'd like to see, like Parasite last year, I'd like to see Minari become a television series. I think it would be fantastic, especially if they can get the cast and the original production crew. It would really be fantastic. And if that does happen, and by the way, if either of those two things happen, we'll let you know. And again, congratulations to Tyler Perry. Thank you for what you said, Tyler. And we'd love to have you on our show. We'll do a full hour with you anytime you like. What he has done in the Atlanta area, setting up Tyler Perry Studios, he is giving birth to a generation of new television and film talent. And I got news for you. With BET and BET Plus and Viacom, he is going to explode. Now that the pandemic is lifting in Georgia, he is going to explode. I promise you. You're going to see some great things from Tyler and his wonderful generation of new talent in the world of television and the world of film. And he really has just a great, great conscience of I was just so overjoyed with that reduce hate speech and how he said it, and his words were just so spot on and so moving. All right, we're going to give you another minute or two to jump in with your thoughts on the Oscars. So pick up the phone and call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Once again, our next episode is Wednesday at this 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. And believe it or not, we have an Oscar nominee for you, former Oscar nominee, Paul Weitz, who was his brother Chris, did a wonderful movie 20 years ago called About a Boy. He was nominated with Chris for Best Adapted Screenplay. Later on, he did one of Amazon's first original TV series and long-running ones, too, Mozart in the Jungle, filmed here in New York, by the way, and dealing with the classical music scene. And now he's a brand-new movie, which is premiering on Crackle next month, called Bel Canto. It's a movie about the world of romance and the world of music, opera specifically. And Julianne Moore, wonderful actress, is in it. So tune us in to catch Paul Weitz. Yes, he is the son of the great designer, clothes designer, John Weitz. So many TV shows had John Weitz people, his wonderful outfits. One of the great clothes designers, men clothes designers of all time. All righty, so going once, going twice, ta-da. Okay. If any of you out there want to, again, give us your thoughts, we'd love to have them, and we'll bring them on in our next episode, okay? Okay. Once again, I want to thank our guests, Matt Kernitz from Wipeout, Jeff Baina from Cinema Toast, joining us this Monday on Tomorrow Life, and thank all of you for tuning in, and I really, really appreciate your listening. And thank you, by the way, because our episodes this month have been very, very well received. They've been marvelous. We've had fantastic guests, and I hope you catch them on replay. We'll tell you how in a second. So again, I want to remind you, Paul Weitz from Bel Canto will join us as our lead guest on Wednesday. Then on Friday, among our guests, we'll have, from the Spanish language powerhouse, Acela Media, we'll have Executive Vice President of Sales, Jason Hall, Executive Vice President of Digital Streaming Media, Renee Fantella, and 1 week from today, at 6 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, 3 hours later than normal, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, from the Sports Emmy-nominated documentary, The Weight of Gold, and HBO producer, Amber Leo Harris. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, and we've had some great ones all month long, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, check out our podcast. They're available 24/7 at Apple TV, at iTunes, Spreaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, Amazon Music, Verbal, and iHeartRadio on the iRadio Podcast Network. If there is a podcast site like Spotify, Audible, Westwood One, et cetera, that doesn't carry our show, let them know you'd like, in nice terms, by the way, be great, be nice and great, let them know you'd like to hear our show there, and let them give us, have them give me a call or email or drop a communication, and we'll get the ball rolling on making it happen, okay? Okay. As always, we love hearing from you. We appreciate you, our audience. That's why we do the show, and we've been doing it for nearly 14 years. So please email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Use that email to be our classic trivia question of the week. And also, we have a feature that we'll do called The Show to Know every so often. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? We want to give it attention, and we want to follow your dictates. But we can't know unless you give us a call or you tell us. So email me, and if we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit, okay? simonapple04@yahoo.com. And I do respond to your emails within 24 hours. You also find me on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. And thanks, everybody, who tuned in to my Twitter feed during the Oscars last night. Really appreciate it. And congratulations, by the way, to all the entertainment news press for their coverage of the Oscars, too. A lot of good stuff came out last night. I want to appreciate everybody who got their 2 cents in the course of last night's event on ABC. As always, we love hearing from you, so do communicate. We do communicate back. Why? Because, as always, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. The Bobby Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. Remember, for a free audiobook or two, 1 month trial and more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. And don't forget, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, it's two audiobooks for the trial of one. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. We're back with you in less than 48 hours, regular time, special Wednesday edition, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the IR Radio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to between now and then, please make it safe, make it great, and make it count. We are going to let this pandemic now and forever, and we, thanks to you, are well on the way. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.